Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi. Today's episode, we are revisiting obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. If you've been listening a while, you may remember that in episode 47, I interviewed Dr. Anthony Bram about OCD. I wanted to return to this topic because it is so much more common and more misunderstood than most people realize. And even though awareness has grown in recent years, the stigma and shame still keep so many people from getting the help they need. My guest today is Dr. Kim Glaser-Leonti, a psychologist who specializes in OCD, anxiety, and perfectionism. She shares such valuable insight into what OCD is, the way our brains get stuck on certain thoughts, and how this can look very different from the stereotypes we often see. We also talk about the incredible variety of OCD themes, how shame can make it hard to open up about symptoms, and what effective treatment looks like. And it can be fun. And something that surprised me is how important a role that loved ones play in the lives of people with OCD. This episode is all about understanding OCD more deeply and breaking down the stigma that surrounds it. Whether you are supporting someone with OCD, working with clients, or just curious about how our minds work and how thoughts can get stuck, I think you'll find this conversation engaging, eye-opening, and shared through a very compassionate lens. Let's get on with the show. Hello, Kimberly. Thank you so much for coming on Focus Forward.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited about this topic. We're going to talk about OCD today and also stigma, the stigma around mental health, the stigma around OCD. And I already had Dr. Anthony Bram on to talk about OCD. And I the other day, I was talking with a woman. I was at the Connecticut Psychologist Association conference, and I was speaking with a woman there who has OCD, and she was saying she was so glad to hear that we were going to do a second episode on OCD, because she said, and this is what we were saying, is that it's not talked about enough. Mm-hmm. And so she was so glad. She said more people need to talk about OCD. That's why she doesn't mind telling people she has it. And so thank you for coming on and talking more about OCD.
Of course. Of course. I'm very excited.
Yeah, great. So why don't we start with, why don't you introduce yourself? Just a brief intro about who you are and what you do.
Sure. So my name is Kim Glaser-Leonti, and I specialize in OCD, anxiety, perfectionism. I'm a psychologist, and I used to work at McLean Hospital's OCD residential program. So that's where I kind of got my initial knowledge and experiences working with OCD. And then it's kind of continued over the years. So that was back in 2007. And so currently I have my OCD specialty private practice, Clearview Horizons. And then I have Break the Cycle, which is self-help and training resources for OCD and anxiety and such. So that's kind of like a little background. About
Great. Thank you. We'll have to talk about your Break the Cycle website later on, because I was taking a look at that and there's such good resources on there, and how wonderful that you've created that and made it so accessible to people. So I would love to, for you to share a little bit more about that maybe towards the end.
I would love that.
Okay, cool. Great. Okay. So, in case anybody didn't listen to the first episode on OCD, or they just want to hear it again, could you describe or define, I guess, what OCD is, and maybe give a little insight into what that experience might be like for someone who has OCD?
Sure. So OCD, the way I kind of describe it to people is that it's very similar to anxiety. And so it's looking at, there's these intrusive thoughts, right? And so we kind of happen to classify certain ones as OCD and other ones as other types of anxiety, but the underlying way of which it works is very, very similar. And so we have these intrusive thoughts that, you know, most people don't like feeling anxious, understandably so. And so when they come in, it's like, oh no, like, what does this mean? Right. And there's this worry and this difficulty with kind of being with that uncertainty and that doubt. And so then people, when they have these uncomfortable thoughts, and they can be across a range of content. So oftentimes people think of OCD as like contamination and checking and symmetry. And those are all very kind of common ways that OCD presents. But there's also so many other also incredibly common ways OCD presents too, right? Intrusive sexual thoughts, intrusive religious thoughts, intrusive harm thoughts, existential worries, health worries, morality worries, relationship worries. So there's just pretty much any thought kind of can become a quote unquote OCD thought, right? So the difference is just that with OCD, people kind of get stuck on that thought, right? Versus someone without OCD might have that same exact intrusive thought, but it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, that's that thought. And they kind of move on from that. Whereas the OCD really latches onto it. And so because it feels so sticky and so scary or so uncomfortable and sometimes, or like a just not right feeling, then people do what we kind of call in OCD language, the ritual compulsion, right? It's the same thing, just different terms, to try to feel better in that moment. And so if you have this thought of like, uh-oh, if I don't do this, then something bad could happen, right? It's understandable that the person's going to do their ritual, right? Because it's like, even if they know that, like, oh, I know it's not going to happen, but like, what if? Right, so sometimes people can kind of know that their OCD thought isn't going to happen. Other times, it can feel like I think it actually will happen, right? And so there's a kind of whole range in kind of one's belief in regards to kind of the likelihood of the OCD. And so the ritual again is designed to feel better in that moment, right? So it's like you have this thought, okay, I need to do this. If I don't, something could happen. And then it's like, okay, as soon as I do this ritual behavior, oftentimes that worry kind of subsides, right? That anxiety decreases in that moment. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes rituals can kind of like spike it more. So say someone's like, okay, I'm worried about this. I'm going to research online to try to get that reassurance. But then as they're researching, it's like, oh no, but now I read this. And so then doing the ritual can actually sometimes increase the anxiety in the moment. But overall, a lot of the times rituals do decrease the anxiety in the moment. That's why they're so, people get stuck doing them, right? Because it's positively reinforced that, like, I feel anxious. I don't like feeling this way. I feel distressed or I feel guilt. I feel disgust. So it's not only anxiety that can be an OCD reaction. So you do that ritual to feel better. You get that temporary relief, but it's only temporary. Right. And so therefore, then like the OCD, just like that intrusive thought will come back again or a different variation of it. And then it's just that's that OCD cycle. So it's the worry, and then how do you respond to that worry? And then by responding to it in the ways that's kind of unintentionally feeding it by doing that ritual. And it just kind of keeps going round and round and round. And so, yeah, oftentimes people can kind of view the intrusive thought, that obsession, that worry as the problem, but it's really not, right? So there was a study of think of anything you want but a pink elephant, right? And so then it's like, all right, you think of a pink elephant. And what that's showing is that, like, you can't control the thoughts. And the thoughts aren't the problem, but when you try to control it and you try to suppress it, they just kind of happen more and more and more and more. And so it's the ritual, right? That behavior that one can actually learn how to and choose to decrease, to not do. And that's what kind of breaks that OCD cycle and leads to the OCD recovery.
So, intrusive thoughts are completely normal, right? Everybody has these. So, if anyone's listening and you have had the experience with intrusive thoughts, that's completely normal. How does one go from having just every day, not every, I don't want to say every day, but like this human experience of intrusive thoughts, how does that go from that to becoming OCD?
Yeah, and that's just kind of like what the OCD is, right? So for people who have OCD, right, it's just that those kind of common experiences of intrusive thoughts just happen to get sticky, right? And
And
so it's
like, I guess, like, what makes them more sticky for one person than another? Do we know? Do we know why that happens?
yeah, I know. I mean, I think that with all kind of mental health conditions, there's kind of like a genetic factor to it. And then there's this other factors as well. And so just some people are more kind of primed for, more predisposed to have OCD. And so it's not so much anything like that they're doing or like, it's just like, okay, these thoughts feel sticky. And then because they feel so scary, right, and so sticky, and then they happen more and more because it's like, well, why am I having this thought? What does this mean? So then people start getting stuck into that cycle. then doing the rituals, and then that kind of is what increases the strength of the OCD over time.
Yeah.
But it's just more of, yeah, some people get stuck, some people don't. Some people have OCD, some people don't.
Yes, right. And the reason why I asked is because I was thinking, I imagine that some people might feel a little bit of guilt. Like, what did I do wrong to end up as a person who does have these sticky thoughts?
Yes.
But it
Yes. Yes.
just happens for some people.
Yes. And that's where it's looking at really kind of norm validating one's experiences and normalizing. Like OCD is actually very, very common, right? Like all different mental health conditions are, and everybody has something, right? So everyone's on some spectrum of every kind of struggle, challenge area. And just some people, it happens to be that they get stuck on these type of intrusive thoughts, right? And again, everybody has them, right? But it's just that some people just kind of like don't care or are able to be like, oh, okay, well, whatever, or just kind of move on, and other people can't. So it's really that sense of like shame and that sense of stigma is such an important part of the OCD recovery process because it's so common. And it's common with OCD, it's common with other, you know, whatever one's struggles areas are, people can easily get sucked into like feeling like guilty, feeling badly, feeling embarrassed, right? And especially with OCD because the content can vary so much. Right? We can get into more because I haven't really gone into like too much about like the specific contents, but essentially like the ways that it shows up, people can feel very, very embarrassed about, very like, oh, I could never share this with anybody because if anyone knew I had these type of worries, like they would kind of view me differently or kind of think very poorly of me. And it's just, and so learning how to let go of that shame and just own like, no, like it doesn't matter. Like the content doesn't matter. It's just kind of whatever the mind's very creative, right? And in general for everybody, but for OCD, that creativity of that mind just kind of gets into overdrive and gets like stuck on these things. So the shame and judgment's so, so common with OCD.
So let's which should we bookmark for revisiting? Should we bookmark the shame and stigma, or should we bookmark that sort of expanded explanation of the different places that it could go?
Maybe the shame and stigma, because if we go more into the broad range of ways it shows, then people can kind of latch onto that shame and stigma onto that more.
All right, let's do it.
So yeah, so as I kind of alluded to a little bit before, that OCD can really latch onto to anything. And so we happen to just have these kind of like categories or these themes, these subtypes that we kind of call that OCD is, but it's impossible to make like something that's all inclusive because OCD can really latch onto anything. And so oftentimes people, when they're looking and learning about OCD, they can be like, oh, but I can't find something that's like exactly what mine is. Does that mean it's not OCD or does that mean it's not common? And that's a very common experience that unfortunately, it's not what that means, right? It's just that it's so, OCD just, it's so creative. And so we have, well, I'll talk about some kind of common areas if I'm not mentioning, I can't mention every common area. And so just something for like listeners to keep in mind that it doesn't mean that like your way of OCD isn't actually OCD or isn't common. And so I actually developed the OCD awareness scale, which is on the website, the let'sbreakthecycle.com, as a free measure to kind of increase awareness about OCD. Because a lot of my research has been on the lack of understanding of OCD across like mental health professionals and such. And so this measure, the scale, is kind of my attempt to make something as comprehensive as I could, and going into the different types of the intrusive thoughts, again, also called like obsessions or worries, and then the rituals, also called compulsions or safety behaviors. And so when looking at the scale, I'll just kind of say a few of the overarching themes. So we have like existential worries. So that can be stuff like, am I actually real? Right? Worrying about the like, do I have free choice over what I'm saying? And people can be like, well, like right now I'm just talking. How do I know like the words that are coming out of my mouth? And people can get really stuck on that aspect of like, but am I in control of my actions or behaviors or thoughts, or am I not? Am I living in like an alternate reality? So there's a lot of different ways like an existential theme can show up for people. And then health ones, that's another one, right? Of kind of worrying about getting a certain medical condition or a certain mental health condition. or things like memory issues or like word recall. So this can be kind of very similar to more of now it would be called in the DSM, like the health illness disorder. It used to be like the hypochondriasis. So they can be with OCD, and again, because it's all it used OCD used to be quote unquote like an anxiety disorder, and there's a lot of overlap between OCD and other presentations. And that's why like the nice thing about that is regardless if it's OCD health or if it's like the health illness disorder health, and I don't love the word disorder, but I'm using in this context of
Yes.
discussing the conditions, the underlying treatments are the same. And so health OCD is kind of common. Morality-based OCD, so there's a term called scrupulosity, which can look at like religious OCD or morality-based. And so morality ones are kind of this worry of being a bad person, or needing to follow rules like 100%. And but it's like the amount of guilt or anxiety that someone feels when they're not doing this is very strong. So it's not just like it's essentially perfecting one's morals, right? So like you have like morals that can be really helpful that these people generally agree, like own and want to have and believe in, which is great, but it just takes it so far to an extreme that it becomes it really is hindering the person and impacting them like substantially. So another one can be like meta OCD, which is kind of essentially like OCD about OCD, right? So it's like, well, do I really have OCD? And these can be like very common, that lots of people have, like, is this really, but this is kind of beyond like just questioning. It's like really getting stuck in, like, is this OCD? Like, am I making this up? Am I doing therapy correctly? Again, not just like a fleeting questions, but like the OCD is getting stuck on these worries. A need to know or remember. So that can be things like, what you're saying during a conversation, what others are saying, information that you see, and it can be like very, very specific. So say that you're reading something and it's like, okay, wait, it was that, did the thing say like a, or did it say the, right? So I kind of really need to know that degree of detail, or does it need to be to like that degree of detail? Meaning to know like situations and, what was this person wearing or what did it, so there's just like this need to know or remember, oftentimes again like a lot of like details of things. So religious OCD, as I mentioned, like scrupulosity goes into like religious and moral, and so these can be ones about kind of that whatever one's faith is, or even for people who don't identify with their faith, they can still have religious OCD, and that can be worrying about. It's essentially kind of like taking one's religion if you do identify as religious, and again trying to like perfect that. And if you're not religious, they can still be worrying about certain aspects of not being religious. With sexual OCD, so that one can kind of focus on a range of different things. So there's ones that's focused on worries about kind of doing something inappropriate sexually. And so that can be a common one is like the pedophile theme OCD. And then you can have like OCD about, again, doing other kind of what would be more like inappropriate sexual things, but not just within the pedophile theme. It could be, with animals or family members and such, like in those that topic area. It can be stuff focused on sexuality, right? And what one's sexuality is, but then it's not questioning sexuality as in someone who's just, exploring their sexuality. This is different than that. And it's this like worry about, am I not being like true to my sexuality? Or what if I am this and I don't know, like I don't know if I am or not. But again, it's different than someone who's going through their like exploration of learning and connecting with their sexuality. Symmetry and exactness. And so this is looking at needing, this can be kind of having certain things that you need to do so that it feels like equal. So it can be like with your body. So if you touch, like one leg, you need to then touch the other leg the same way. Or if you're like walking, needing to feel symmetrical. So sometimes it can be like a specific like numbers, like even or odd numbers, or needing to kind of like write in a way that feels symmetrical, that feels kind of right.
I had someone share with me that she has OCD and she experiences that. And so she said, like, if her left hand is cold, she needs to make her right hand cold.
Yes. So it says there's so many ways that it can show up within each theme. Yeah, that's a great example of a symmetry exactness one. The perfectionism. So this one, it kind of historically isn't kind of considered like an OCD, but OCD and perfectionism is so common together that in this scale, I include a section on perfectionism. So that's just, like fear of making mistakes, thinking that your work isn't good enough. I found a difference between OCD perfectionism and perfectionism that's not OCD overall is that with the OCD, I find that it's more of this like doubt, right? So like the work quality is like, oh, well, is this good enough? Or what do people versus with a different type of non-OCD perfectionism, I find that's more of like the person kind of owns and feels the quality of work is actually quite good, but they're just, are very perfectionistic in doing the work. And then there's the relationship OCD. So that can kind of look at, questioning, am I in the right relationship? But again, more than just someone who is, questioning the relationship, but it's getting stuck on like, do I truly love this person? It can be hyper focused on like a certain aspect of someone and be like, ooh, like I don't like that piece. Is that mean? Like, and then over identifying what that means. It can be a lot of comparing when out, it's like, okay, well, like I'm looking and seeing how these other couples look, right? And do I look at my partner this way? Do I feel this way? So it's a lot of just like in the head comparisons and checking can be very common with relationship OCD. And it doesn't only have to focus on like romantic relationships. Sensory movement. So that's another really common one where people are kind of hyper focused and aware of it could be like of swallowing, of blinking, of how it feels when you're walking. So it's just a lot of awareness about kind of body and movements and such. And then a few other ones. So then we have just right. And so that one can be kind of doing things until it feels just right. So that can show, so it could be if you're taking a drink of water and you might just take a drink and that's it. But then another time when you go and take a drink, it might not feel right, maybe when you're swallowing or when you're touching the glass. So it's like, okay, then you put the glass down and then you have to like pick it up again. And so sometimes it might be you just the second time it feels right. Other times it could be hundreds of times until it feels right. So it's kind of variable in when something is not feeling right, and then the kind of repeating the action until it you get that kind of sense. Sometimes it can be related to it needs to feel right, otherwise something bad will happen. And other times it's more of like if it doesn't feel right, then it's there's not a worry about a consequence. It just doesn't feel right. And so it just feels so uncomfortable that the person then needs to kind of repeat. You can have random intrusive thoughts, which are not really focused on a theme that feels really distressing, but it's just like the presence of the random thoughts that keep coming is the distressing part, right? So it can be like just a random word or a song or, and it's just like it just gets on that loop. And so that's the part that they're getting stuck on that feels really uncomfortable is just the randomness and the repetitiveness of whatever it is that is showing up. Harm OCD. And so that's looking at worries about either intentionally or accidentally causing harms to others or to yourself or doing something or not doing something that then could kind of lead something to happen that could cause harm. So that's a really common way that OCD can present. Real event OCD is looking at things that actually kind of have happened. So a lot of times OCD is kind of focusing on like, oh, like the what ifs, but real event is when something actually did happen, but the person kind of views it as something that is like unforgivable, right? Something that's like so bad and defining and that they never deserve to let go of. Whereas other people, when they are hearing about this event, are kind of like either not a big deal at all, or like, oh, okay, maybe not like one's finest moment, but still not a big deal. But for the person with real event OCD, they're really getting like very stuck on what it is that actually happened. And again, kind of having a lot of difficulty letting that go. And that tends to feel like a lot of like guilt, a lot of it can be anxiety as well, but like guilt tends to be a strong reaction for that one. Contamination. So that one's kind of the one of the ones that tend to be more widely known and discussed. And even within contamination, there's such a wide range. So it can be a worry of getting sick, right? Getting sick and dying. It can be a worry not about you getting sick, but what if you get somebody else sick? Or it can be not even about getting sick, but just like it just feel like this feel like the disgust reaction, or like a just not liking the thought and concept of touching things with like germs. So to get it's not related to an outcome, but it's just like, ooh, like I can't touch that. It can be a thing called emotional contamination, which is when someone kind of worries about the getting certain attributes from somebody else. So if there's something that someone kind of finds like more kind of like scary, and this one can people can feel really guilty because it's I can come across of like, ooh, like I don't want to, I'm afraid to use the seat because this person sat there, and they're like, oh no, but like this person's okay, but my OCD is latching on to this, and I feel so bad because now I'm getting stuck on this person. And so that can be one, as we go back to that shame and stigma topic, that can be very, that can really activate that shame and stigma. But it's very common. Emotional contamination can be with people, it can be with places. So it's just another way that contamination OCD presents. And then the last couple ones I have here are the false memories. So this is just getting, and that this can go to any theme of OCD, but this worry of like, well, did this happen? Am I remembering it correctly? So that could again go to like contamination, to harm, to sexual, to existential, to like anything that can latch on to. Same with that magical thinking that I spoke about with the just not right. The magical thinking is just like it's like superstitious thinking, right? But it's just like a term that we use in OCD. That's okay. The two actions aren't, there's no relationship between them, but the OCD makes it so there is one. So it can be like, okay, well, if I see the number, three, then I can't do certain actions when I see a number three, or I have to, because if I do, then like something's going to happen. Right. So it's kind of like the, don't step on a crack because you're break your mother's back. Like that's, it's like that. And it just shows up in so many different ways. So that's magical thinking. And again, that can latch on to any type of OCD theme. And then there's another kind of common way it can show up is with like postpartum perinatal OCD. And that can be with either parent. Of essentially across any theme, but just more specific to like being pregnant or having a baby. So it could be again like harm OCD, it can be contamination OCD, it could be sexual OCD, it can really be any theme, but just the it is focused on, having a baby or yeah. So those are kind of again not every way OCD can show up, but that all of those different themes are on the OCD awareness scale. And there's a lot of examples for each theme to try to kind of help people see the broad range of ways that OCD kind of presents.
Oh, I have like 16,000 questions right
I
now.
can
So
talk about this stuff like all day.
I know it's fascinating. So, let's see. I don't even know which one to ask first. Well, first of all, I just want to say that, that you were saying before that OCD is more common than we realize. I don't know if that's the right way to phrase it, but hearing all of that, I just feel such strong emotion for all these people out there who are basically probably feeling pretty tortured by all of this. And that makes me so sad. I feel like I should pay attention to more things in some of those categories. And then I think about, oh, all these people whose brains just can't let that go. And then that made me think of something that Dr. Bram shared with me was like a fMRI scan maybe, or some kind of scan of the prefrontal cortex of a person with and without OCD, and how constantly it's lit up like all the time in a person with OCD. And then you think, well, yeah, I mean, that makes sense because they're constantly thinking about it and you probably like using some of that executive function thinking around that, even though it's an obsession. It's not maybe, I don't want to say it's not real because I'm sure it av
Yes,
absolutely
yes, yes.
feels real. But oh, it's, I, yeah, I just, I was just when you were going through all that, I'm like, I just kept thinking about all these people that are really struggling and how it's a shame that You hear this, oh, I have OCD when people are just like wiping off the table, or they like
Yes,
want to
yes.
wash their hands maybe after they go to the bathroom or whatever. Oh, I'm so OCD.
Yes,
And I
yes,
feel like
yes.
that, whatever the word is, like, I'm not saying that it's bad to say that, but I feel like it doesn't really accurately represent the huge expanse
Yes.
that OCD actually is.
Yes,
And
yes,
then
yes.
in some ways, do you feel like that minimizes or contributes to that stigma?
I think that unfortunately it can for sure, and it can also really invalidate people's experiences
Yeah.
when they have OCD, and also minimize the impact that like contain like these more commonly talked about OCD. It kind of minimize the impact of those ones too, right?
Yeah.
Because contaminant OCD can be like incredibly difficult, right? And so it's like it's I always get the questions of like, okay, like which OCD is like quote unquote like the worst one to have?
Right.
It's not one,
Yeah.
because it's
Yeah.
really not about the comparing the between the themes. It's really about the strength of the OCD, right? So the goal is to help people get to a place where they don't care what's popping up, right? And it's like they're not getting stuck on whatever their intrusive thought is. But someone could have contamination OCD and be getting incredibly stuck and really having that be just as scary, just as impactful, just as difficult as someone with pedophile OCD. So
Yeah.
it's not that like one is worse than the other, but I feel like sometimes when people can be like, oh, I'm so OCD with like a contamination, that can also unintentionally minimize like
Right.
contamination OCD.
Yeah, right.
So there's like that element of it, and then yeah, it's not a like fun, silly kind of thing. Like OCD is it's from when people have it, and when it's strong for someone, like it's incredibly difficult and
Oh, for
incredibly
sure.
scary for
Yeah.
people, and the shame can latch on to any of the themes. And then when we look at kind of certain ones, like for example, like the pedophile intrusive thought worry, right? The people can have an extra worry of shame with that one, with the harm one, with essentially that worry about, okay, well, if I share this to someone, even a mental health, like a therapist, are they going to think that I actually want to do these things? Are they going to think I actually am a pedophile, or that I actually am someone that's at risk of harming or killing other people, right? With that intrusive harm thoughts. And it's the complete opposite, right? So that with OCD, so it's that these people they're so worried, and they're having this thought, that intrusive thought, and latching onto that, and so worried that they are going to do something, right? Or that they did something. And again, like that false memory OCD, like what if I did, or what if I said something and someone interpreted it this way? So the mind is just kind of getting them stuck in this loop, but it's the last thing that they want to do. Like they're
Oh,
terrified
wow.
of doing these things, but they're not doing these things, but their mind is making them feel like they are. So with pedophile OCD, people often feel like they are, right? Or get so worried that, okay, oh, I know I'm not, but what if I snap today?
What if I
Right.
do?
And it's not that they have the desire to, like there's no desire to act on these thoughts, to
Right.
do these things, but the mind is just kind of bombarding them and making them worry, like, well, how do I know for sure? What if this happened? Or what if I lose control? Or so it's this, but then that content of it, right, can then add an extra layer of shame of, okay, but I can't tell anybody this, because what if they like think that I am? Or what if they say something that confirms that I am, because they're so worried that they are. And so it can be, and it can also be incredibly liberating, right? When they kind of speak to someone that really gets OCD, and it's like, okay, this is OCD. And it doesn't make all the worries go away, but it's this sense of like, okay, like, yeah, this makes sense. This is what's happening.
Give an explanation for
Yes,
why.
yes. So with all the OCD, it's essentially like these worries are things that people don't want to be doing, right, and are terrified that it could happen. And then the real event one can feel extra sticky, right, for people, because it's like these are things that actually happen, right? But again, the OCD is like magnifying it of things that like other people are like, this is not a big deal,
Yeah.
right? But the OCD can't let that go, because the OCD feels, or the OCD can be like, okay, but maybe I didn't explain it like well enough, and if I explained it differently, or you're just saying that because you don't want me to feel bad. Right. And so the OCD's job is to keep people stuck. And it can always kind of come up with little comments and questions that are designed to pull that person back in and keep them worrying about it.
Wow, it's fascinating. How can we, you as a provider and me as someone who, has a podcast and a voice, how can we help help reduce that stigma or get rid of it completely so that
Yeah.
people can feel comfortable reaching out and saying, "Hey, I'm really struggling and I've been struggling for a long time. I don't want to feel this way anymore, and I want to know why I'm feeling this way."
Yes. I mean, I think that increasing just like awareness and education on OCD is one, which is like what you're doing right now, right? So I think that's one really important piece. I think that a lot is being improved overall with just mental health in general and trying to reduce stigma and shame around it. There's a lot more kind of celebrities, opening up about what their struggles are, some in OCD as well. And there was Luke Combs, right, a singer. He recently spoke about OCD, and it was cool because he actually spoke. Sometimes when people speak about OCD, they're kind of talking about ones that are more of like the contamination ones, which again can be incredibly difficult. But it was cool that he spoke about more of like the taboo thoughts, right? So like the harm thoughts, which is like people sharing about those type of OCD experiences can be really great. I saw something recently, Miss Rachel.
Oh,
We love
yeah.
Miss Rachel in my family. My daughter
Yeah.
loves her. And she recently disclosed that she used to struggle with strong OCD. So the more that people that have more of a social kind of pull are sharing about these things, I think that overall kind of helps people feel more comfortable. And then
Absolutely.
just increasing, like knowledge of OCD is just so important because it's going to help, minimize the that shame that people are feeling, right? That like this thought is so bad, or like I can't share this, or like people would judge me. I think I'm horrible if they knew what my mind is throwing at me. And it's like, no, more people will get it than people realize,
Yeah.
right? Because it's not, and the more that education about OCD is out there, the more and more people will get that, like, oh, like all right, that's just what the mind's getting stuck on. Like it's not a big deal. Not minimizing for that person, like it is a big deal, right? It's a very big deal, and it's incredibly difficult and painful what they're going through and the ways that it's impacting them over, their experiences with it. But at the same time, helping them kind of see that like it's not a big deal, right? We want to be able to let go and not care what the mind, whatever random thoughts and worries and that the mind is kind of throwing at you.
The first time we spoke, you had mentioned a little bit about working with providers as well, because mental health providers and how you support mental health providers and learning about OCD to, and that can also help reduce the stigma. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So I love doing kind of trainings for professionals on OCD to really help increase awareness of like the and not just like, oh, it can be like sexual ones or harm ones or existential, but really kind of getting into more of the details because again, it's so variable within themes that really being able to understand more and for professionals to kind of be like, oh, and then that helps them be able to talk to their clients about it. And again, I'm hoping that this OCD awareness scale, which I've gotten some very positive feedback on, will be really helpful for a range of people, right? For people with OCD, for professionals, for loved ones who want to learn more about OCD, for just people in general that aren't in the field that want to understand OCD more. It's just a kind of tool that's giving a lot of information about how OCD shows up. So I think that doing trainings, it's just something I'm super passionate about as well to help kind of increase that awareness.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea of the extent of it.
Yes,
So I'm
yes,
glad
yes.
that you went through every single one and explained
Oh,
it.
yeah.
It not only is it interesting, but it also really does. I mean, it really helped me with my understanding of
Yeah.
OCD.
And that was just like a brief summary of
Yeah,
that, right? And so it's
right.
like there's so much more. Like I could talk hours like about like each theme,
Yeah,
right?
I'm
Like no
sure.
joke. So it's because
Yeah.
we also only spoke on the worries, right? So like on the intrusive thoughts, the scale has a whole second section on like the rituals, right? And
Yeah.
that section. So there's just so much education on OCD and on how it presents. That's just the more that people know, the more helpful it's going to be, and the more it normalizes people's experiences.
Yeah.
And there's also research that has shown that there's a significant delay, like really significant between onset of symptoms and people kind of learning they have OCD and then getting effective treatment, like over 10 years, like up to like 8 years
Oh,
research.
10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's, I think I hope that it will, get better and better as, mental health is talked about more and OCD is talked about more. But there's part of that is just lack of like understanding what OCD is. And
Yeah.
then also you can see like some of these themes can have such taboo, right? And so it can be really difficult for people to even share what they're experiencing, or can take someone, be in therapy, but then not really touching on this stuff for a while. And so there's so many factors that can make it so that OCD isn't identified. And so that's why just again, increasing awareness is just so important, because it's so common. Like so many people have OCD
Yeah.
that really being able to like, and the treatment's so effective that it's like we want to really help people, one, let go of that shame and stigma. Right? And a lot of that is like self-compassion and even sharing some of this stuff with certain people. Right, like outside of like the therapy. So I find that's not essential for like everyone, but a lot of times people can feel with loved ones, like, oh, like I can't let them know these thoughts. Right. And
Yeah.
then it's they, but that's also reinforcing that something's bad, that these
Oh,
are bad, this is
yeah.
horrible. And it's not.
That's
And
so
so it's,
interesting.
yeah, that piece
Yeah.
of like learning
So,
to share. Yep.
yeah, I want to talk, I want you to talk more about the therapy but I just want to share, just in the past week, I have found myself in two conversations with people who were very open about their OCD, and it didn't occur to me until what you just said, like that. It maybe even is part of their treatment.
Yes. It def and it's and no, it's not saying that everyone needs to be like that
Of
open,
course, of
right? But for a
course.
lot of
Yeah.
people, like that can, it's so empowering for people to get to
Yeah.
that place
Yeah.
where they can be like, yeah, like this is the type of worry that they have. And it's like
Yeah.
it's part, it can be a really helpful part of that recovery process of
And I
letting go
have to
of that
say,
shame.
they both were just kind of very matter of fact about
Yeah, yeah,
it.
yeah, yeah,
There
yeah.
was, I didn't detect any shame at
Yeah,
all,
oh, it's
which
awesome.
now that I've spoken with you, I think, oh wow, that's really cool.
Yes. And imagine what that must feel like for
Yeah,
them,
for them, right?
right? It's like, oh, like they can talk about if, I don't know what their thoughts were, but say it was, whatever it was, that they
Yeah.
can kind of say that stuff
Yeah.
and not be experiencing that shame. Like that's super freeing.
Yeah, and
So yeah,
takes
that's
away the
a,
power. Or at least helps to take away the
yes.
power.
Yes. So that's a big piece that like well, a part of the work is can be looking at like how are you holding that shame in, right? And what are ways
Yeah.
that we can let some of that shame go? Even with doing exposures, people can feel a lot of shame, right? Because it's like, say that someone that is doing an exposure, we call it like a contamination one
Wait, can
of,
we go back and
yes.
explain what that means? I mean,
Yeah.
I remember Dr. Bram did talk about it, but again, just in case nobody, just in case someone didn't listen to the first episode.
Yeah. So the exposure, also called ERP or exposure and response prevention. So this is kind of like the gold standard therapy approach for OCD. And what it's doing is it's looking at changing the relationship with the OCD. And so oftentimes, again, people kind of have that worry and it's like, uh-oh, this is bad. How do I stop this? I need to, or I need to like convince myself that this is okay, or I need to get that relief, right? And so then they're doing the rituals to, again, try to get that to feel better in that moment. And so what exposure does, and that's just reinforcing that whole cycle. So exposure is taking, and it's cutting between the intrusive thought and doing the ritual. So it's breaking that cycle of thought ritual to thought not doing ritual, and or reducing ritual, because sometimes it can be too hard to kind of just stop all rituals. And the goal is not to perfect. Like everyone has habits that they do and things they do that aren't helpful, and we're not trying to perfect anything, but we're trying to substantially reduce rituals that people are doing. And learning how to go into the thoughts. So that people are already having these scary, uncomfortable, distressing like thoughts, images, right, sensations. Let's go into an example. You mentioned kind of a symmetry one earlier, so I'll kind of do a variation of that, a different way for symmetry. So for example, say someone is taking a drink of water or holding a book or their computer, right, in like say their right hand. Right. And then it's like, okay, well, now I need to hold something of like equal weight in the left hand, because if I don't, my body's not going to be symmetrical. Right. So that's the worry about like body symmetry. And so the worry's already there. And so the part of the exposure is we want to embrace that worry. So we're not trying to say, hold that book in the right hand, not hold anything in the left hand, but then be like, okay, like this is just the OCD, or okay, like my body's not going to be, it doesn't matter, like my body, this isn't going to impact the symmetry of my body, because that's all rituals. That's essentially swapping ritual. So instead of holding two things and trying to make it equal weight, right, we're not holding two things, so that's great, but then we're still doing a ritual with mentally how we're kind of talking to ourselves. So that exposure mindset. So instead, we want to be just holding that book in the right hand, and then embracing that worry, right? So kind of going into, okay, my body's uneven right now, right? This could make my body permanently uneven, right? So like whatever the worry is, we want to really go into that.
Yeah, interesting.
So as we're
Okay.
embracing that, right? Then and we're doing the action. So the action, holding that book, right? Embracing that mindset. And then we have cut out that ritual,
Yeah.
right? And that's what the exposure process is. So it's not just like facing the fear.
Yeah.
It's being aware of like those three components of, again, like what are we trying to do, right? And then what are we trying to not do, right? From like the ritual perspective,
Yeah.
and then what's the mindset that we're embracing during?
And does it work because then the person sees, like, hey, I didn't do the thing, I embraced the fear, and nothing happened?
Not so much the
Okay.
latter part.
Okay. How, why does it work then? Good thing I'm not, good thing I don't have your job.
Well, partly what you're saying, yes, but partly no.
Okay.
Because if it's what you're saying completely, that's just, again, another way of
Oh,
reassurance. So it's
yeah,
like, I can
right.
do
Dang
this,
it.
but only because nothing happened.
Yeah,
Right. And then
right.
the mind, again, the OCD is very, very smart and very
Ooh,
creative. And so it
tricky.
can be like, all right, well, it didn't happen this time, but like, what if it does next time? In some ways that OCD shows up, it's not like in that moment the worry. It could be, years from now or decades from now or after one's life of what the worry would be. Right.
Yeah.
So like the so if it's kind of like, okay, it didn't happen, that's not applicable for like every theme. Right. And so it's more of teaching that I can do these things, I cannot do the ritual, and I can embrace the uncertainty. Right. And then over time, as you're doing that, it feels less scary. But initially, it feels more scary, right?
Yeah.
Because the exposures are tough because you're changing. It's all about changing the relationship to the thoughts, to the anxiety, to the worries, to the discomfort, the distress, right? The guilt. And yeah.
I was just going to say, I remember Dr. Bram said, you learn you can tolerate the discomfort.
Yes. And that's that key. And are like, yes, a big goal is over time to not be, so anxious, to not be so uncomfortable. But if we're using that as like we're doing this to feel better, then that's just another control strategy, right? Another quote unquote ritual. And rituals, again, are what feed the cycle. So the goal is that we're doing this stuff so that we can learn how to be with the discomfort, be with the unknown, be with kind of whatever the worries are. And that's the goal. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, it
Yeah. So that's
does.
why it's so powerful, because we're not trying to get that certainty. We're not trying to feel better. But
Right.
it's really tough because these things, again, for people can feel like beyond important, right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, no, like I have to do this, or like it feels too much of a risk not to, right? Or it's like, all right, like I know I probably don't need to, but like, but what if, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like kind of that better be safe than sorry of I might as well do this. But again, that's just making it stronger and stronger and stronger.
Yeah.
So it's this kind of, it's a very challenging process. And that's why you never force anyone to do anything. And
Right.
you're going at someone's pace, and there's ways to make exposures like less intense. There's ways to make them more intense. There's ways to sometimes like add in like fun and creativity, right? To make it like more playful, not distracting from doing something challenging, right? But you can like add in like a playful element at times as well. Not every single time, right? But there's ways to do it at someone's pace and in ways that works for them. And it's also a really empowering process because it's helping people like, whoa, like I used to have to do this, this, and this, or I couldn't do this,
That's
right?
great.
And now look at what I can do.
Yeah. I saw that on your Instagram, how you said it's okay to incorporate fun and playfulness, and
Yes.
yeah,
Yes.
that's really
Yes.
cool.
Yes.
Yeah, because
Yes.
I'm sure that lightens the weight of it, the feel of
Yeah.
it.
Yes. And so like, for example, like what, like an example of that could be, right? Looking at, I like playing games, right? And
Yeah.
I like doing games can be fun. So like
Yeah.
with clients, sometimes it could be something like, and the game doesn't have to be related specific to the exposure. So like with contamination, like in this example, it could, or you can do it with a non-contamination. But say that you're working on, touching items that feel like contaminated. So say it's like an article of clothing, and that could be maybe emotional contamination that someone touched it that triggered the OCD, right? So now it's like, oh, I need to avoid that. But say it's like they're a shirt, right? So you can take that shirt, then we can like get either a trash can for like an extra element of exposure, or just like a laundry basket or a box or whatever, and like shoot baskets, right? Like from the taking
Cool.
that contaminated thing and shooting
Yeah,
baskets,
that's awesome.
right? And so you're still like the goal, you're touching it, and as you're doing it, right, you're focusing on, okay, I'm touching this, like this person touched this shirt, right? Or it can be an emotional contamination. It could be like maybe the color of the shirt is triggering, maybe from like a religious perspective, right? Or like a contamination perspective. So you're touching that and you're focusing on like what that worry is, right? Or maybe you're shooting with, one hand and not both hands. Or maybe you're shooting and you're going to shoot it like four times because four is like a quote unquote like OCD bad number for the person. Right. So there's so many different like creative ways you can
Yeah, that's
implement it, but you're
cool.
adding in like that game element, right? Or it could be if it's not contamination, maybe you're just shooting a basket, right? And it can be again like a real basket or like a pretend one. And the goal is that when you miss or when you make it, right, then you're saying like a triggering exposure statement out loud. Right. So like the actual act of like shooting, like there's
Yeah,
no
this has nothing to do with
OCD,
it.
nothing to do with that, but you're just adding
Yeah.
like a game element into it.
Ah, that's cool. That's really
So that's
cool.
like kind of what I mean with making it like fun. You can kind
Yeah,
of pair it
right.
up with making it more game-like,
Yeah.
while still being very true to the exposure element of it and in that mindset and the ritual reduction piece of it as you're working on the exposure.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
That's really
yeah. So it's a really cool process because it's so creative and it's so powerful in the sense of like the goal again is to change your relationship with it. So we're not trying to stop it, we're not trying to avoid it or get rid of it. And we're trying to learn how to like go into it and be with it. And then over time, as you're doing that, the OCD loses its power.
loses its power, yeah. And I love how it's the goal is the same, the approach meets the person wherever they are and whatever their OCD, however it presents, so that the treatment itself is going to look different, but it's still the same sort of approach and
That's why there's so many nuances like with doing exposure therapy, because it's not just like, oh, you're afraid of this, like just go do that, right? And sometimes that can be like a
Just hold the
misconception.
spider.
And there can be exposures that can be like great for people to do, but you don't have to do it, right? So it's like it's not that you need to do like every single thing, but it's a really I think it's a really kind of like challenging, but also like quote unquote like fun, cool process of working on the OCD in one's spirit.
So I mean I don't when I was listening to that thing I when you were giving that list I couldn't really identify with any of them, but I have struggled with anxiety in my life, and I have found that the most effective way for me to get over something that I'm anxious about is to do it. Because then I can look back and say I did it, and all the things that I thought were going to happen didn't happen. It's really effective, at least for me it is. So I can see how that is, and I don't tell this story to minimize the experience of OCD. I mean, I know it is a whole different thing. But yeah, I mean, you kind of have to do the thing.
And like that piece too of that, and that can be that tricky thing of like you do it and that thing didn't happen. But again, with OCD, it can be like, oh, but what if it does next
But
time?
what if it, yeah,
Right.
next
So that's
time.
why it's like the
Oh,
repeated
right.
exposures.
It's so
But
different.
is it, yeah. And so it's looking at really being able to kind of continually do these types of things that again feel really scary or feel really risky, right? To learn how to let go. But then it is like being like, wow, like I can do this stuff. And so it's a really cool experience for people. But it's can be very difficult and also really tough because OCD can kind of jump around so much, right? So someone can kind of make gains in one area, but then a different intrusive thought, and it's like, okay, now just switch to that one. And that's why it's looking at that, going back to what I said before, there's not like a theme that's, the most challenging. It's that how strong the OCD is.
All right, so we've been talking about the person with OCD getting support and what that experience is like for them. What if you have someone in your life that you love or that you work with or that you just see during your day? How can we support those people? What are the things that we can do? And then also, like a little side question, if if you think somebody has OCD, should you say anything or should you do anything?
Yeah, so I think that it depends on kind of like the relationship that you have with the person, right? And so I think that if you're thinking that someone has OCD, and if you feel comfortable and you feel like that it would be well received, right? Then it could be like, hey, like I was listening to this podcast on OCD, or like I read this thing on OCD, or like I looked at the scale, like the OCD awareness scale, and I want to kind of share this resource and kind of just see if there's something that you might feel that you struggle with. But I think it really depends on like the context of the relationship with the person.
Yeah.
But then for people who you do know, so if they've shared with you or you're like a big support person for the person with OCD, and it's looking at, okay, how do you help somebody? Because you don't want to be reinforcing the OCD, right? But you also don't want to go to like complete exposure if that's not where they're at, because that would be too challenging. So it's really kind of helping the person kind of connect with like an OCD specialist. So I mean, there's the therapy route, and then there's also like the non-therapy kind of like self-help type of route. And I think like education on OCD, on exposures, on the acceptance-based principles, and like yourself getting educated on it too. And then in therapy, if they are going the therapy route, then it's kind of matching up kind of the exposure work they're doing with kind of what you're doing. And if you're not and doing self-help, then it can be that same type of process, but just making sure that like your loved one is not on the same page as you, right? And so it's looking at with OCD, a lot of times it can be a lot of ways that it's accommodated, and which can be very like well-intentioned, and but it unintentionally is reinforcing the OCD. And so we want to work on as your loved one is working on reducing their rituals. Part of that rituals might be you giving them reassurance. Right. It might be kind of you accommodating certain, so say that they have a fear of driving, and then because of maybe like hit and run OCD or a different type of OCD with driving, and then it's like, okay, so you're always driving. And so then it's working like that's a ritual, right? Or if it's going to they're going to stores, but then they want you to always be with them, because what if they said something inappropriate as they're walking by someone, so they want to have you there. So it's like so that they can be like, okay, did I say anything? Right, or they know that you would say something if you did. And so you're kind of accommodating the OCD by always going to stores with them.
Right.
Right. So it's really common to have accommodating reassurance behaviors with OCD. And so it'd be looking at and then reducing kind of those and talking about, hey, okay, so like let's come up with a plan, and I'm going to work on doing X, Y, and Z differently. And even like with the reassurance, and it can be looking at how do we change your response. So if someone's worried about, okay, well, did I do something inappropriate? And you're like, no, it's okay. Or like, oh, that's just your OCD, right? And that's sometimes people can feel like that's really helpful, but that's a sneaky reassurance trap. And so instead, it can be developing a plan of, okay, your job is to try to work on not asking reassurance. When you do, right? Like, what? Let's come up with a plan of how I'm going to respond, right? And so like an exposure response would be like, oh, maybe you did say something inappropriate. All right, so that would be really helpful for like a loved one to say when that person is trying to get reassurance. If that feels like too much to start with, right, then it's looking at, okay, maybe it would be, I'm not gonna answer that question right now. But you're saying that in like a loving way. You're not being like, yeah, I'm not gonna, you're not dismissing it, but it's like, yeah, like let's not have this conversation, right? Or I'm following this our plan of, or if I'm not gonna answer that question. Right. Or so, or oh, yep.
So that must be really difficult for the person who does not have OCD, because if you love someone, you don't want them to experience any discomfort. You don't, I can imagine you want to protect them and, oh yeah, I'll drive for you, or I'll say those things, and then you're unintentionally not helping. So I imagine that the partner going to a therapy session and learning about this would probably be a good thing to do.
Oh, incredibly helpful.
Yeah,
Yes, yes,
yeah,
yes.
yeah.
And it's also validating that, like for sure, like it's so understandable. And that's why a lot of times people are unintentionally doing these rituals.
Yeah.
And then sometimes too, because it can be so distressing for the loved one, if you don't do the ritual, then it like the distress can get even stronger, or the person can kind of express frustration or can kind of like become upset with like, no, like I need you to do this, right? So it's just it can be there are so many challenges to that process. And so it's validating both. Like the person with OCD is they're not trying to do this, right? They're not like they hate that this is happening. And so we don't want there's no like blame, right, on that person or on the loved one for doing rituals that are feeding it, right? It's like it's so understandable why people are doing what they're doing. And so it's looking at, and that's that like letting go of that shame, letting go of that stigma, bringing in that compassion of like you guys are you're trying, and we just got to kind of figure out how we can kind of tweak things to work on not feeding the OCD. And then like for another, so going into that exposure mindset for not reassurance is too hard. Then another thing could also be like an acceptance mindset, right? So if they're like asking for that reassurance, like, did I say something? So instead of saying like, yeah, I think you did, or maybe you did, or I don't know if you did, right? Or it could be looking at, let's practice sitting with the uncertainty, right? So it's like there's so many different variations that you can
Interesting.
do to kind of help give a helpful response. Like that exposure response can be super powerful, but if someone's not ready for that, if that's too high on that hierarchy, right? Then like, you don't have to do that, right? And so there's other ways to be helping that's not feeding the OCD cycle.
Wow, it's so complicated. And it's wonderful that the therapy does work and that there is, and meds too. Are meds part of the story as well?
Yeah, medications can be incredibly helpful for people. I'm a psychologist, so I'm not a psychiatrist. So I don't prescribe and don't kind of have like the education or the scope to kind of talk like in detail about it, but a lot of times medication can be very helpful.
So having a good team, a part, if you have a partner, then having making sure they understand, having
Yes.
a good therapist that you're working with, and then having a good psychiatrist
Yes. And just
if you
a
use
piece
if
about like the therapy too, because it can be there's so many different types of therapies, and like even
Mm-hmm.
within if someone's doing exposure, the keys I would kind of recommend if you're working with someone is to have like a practice plan, to have homework that you're actively doing outside of the sessions, because that's where the bulk of the gains are going to be made. And so like it's something that the therapist is kind of coming up with you and ideally like emailing to you or texting to you, so you have like the actual plan that you're doing like exposures in between sessions. Also doing exposures depending where you're at in the process, but especially kind of like or the earlier on in the therapy of like actively doing exposures with your therapist is really important, because if you just do it for homework, there's so many, as you're saying, there's so many like nuances to it that people can kind of like think they're doing it, but then unintentionally be missing key points that's really making it so that you're not actually doing exposure. And so you really want to be practicing it in session with therapists, with your therapist, as you're working on the OCD. So those are kind of two pieces. And that the mindset that you're going into, ritual reduction, and then yeah, what are the challenges that you're working on? So those are kind of the three pieces that I would talk to your therapist about if you're doing exposure, if you're doing OCD therapy, and might be not, including those pieces, those would be helpful ones to bring in.
Great. Wow, I feel like we could talk about this all day.
I agree.
Well, thank you so much. Is there anything that is that you would like any main message or main takeaway for people that you really want to make sure people hear?
Yeah, I think my main takeaway message would be that it's okay if you're struggling with OCD, and that there's nothing quote unquote like weird or quote unquote wrong with you, that these intrusive thoughts, like however they're showing up, like that it's okay, right? And to learn to own them and be at peace with them versus being like, oh, this is so bad, or why can't I stop this? And that yeah, really letting go of that shame and stigma, and that there is really effective therapy that can help you with the OCD.
That's great. A message of hope. So, if people are interested in learning more about OCD and about the scale that you have made, sounds like it would be very helpful for people, and the other resources that you've created, where can people find that?
Yeah, so the website is letsbreakthecycle.com. And so that's for the kind of OCD self-help and trainings. And then for therapy, that's at cvhorizons.com, for clearviewhorizons.com. So either of those, you're welcome to explore more.
Cool. Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This has been fascinating, and I've learned so much, and I really hope that the listeners did too.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been so nice speaking with you and sharing and talking more about OCD.
And that's our show for today. Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen. My main takeaway from today's episode is that two episodes about OCD on one podcast is still not enough. Our brains are endlessly fascinating to me, and this episode was no different. I hope that this conversation brings more awareness about OCD to our Focus Forward audience, and I really hope it offers hope to those who might be struggling with it. As my guest shared, there is hope because treatment is effective. As always, this podcast is just a stop on your journey, and it is not a substitute for medical or mental health advice. If you are struggling with OCD or think you might have it and need help, please reach out to a professional for additional support. If you have any thoughts on today's episode, I would love to hear from you. You can email me at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. Thank you so much for helping us spread the word about executive function skills. When you share the podcast or review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, it really does make a difference for us, so thank you. You can sign up for the subscriber email. Then we tell you every time we drop an episode. You can find that on our website, beyondbooksmart.com/podcast. And a billion thanks to Sean Potts, our editor and producer, who has been helping me behind the scenes, as you may know if you've been listening for a while, for almost 4 years. And to Dr. Kim Glazer-Leonti for joining me, and to my Wendy, my colleague, Wendy Craven, for connecting me with her. Thanks for listening.